And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and yes, we are here talking about your Toronto Blue Jays coming off a long overdue blowout. Speaking of long overdue, we do this show twice a week. We talk about the Blue Jays once a week. Me and Caitlin McGrath, who covers the Blue Jays for The Athletic. You can read everything she writes at The Athletic. If you head over to theathletic.com/spinrate, sign up, give you a tidy deal. You can let them know that we sent you and we're off and running. And then another time a week, the other time later in the week, me and Ricky Romero, former Blue Jays starter, former All-Star, talk about the Toronto Blue Jays. And Ricky joins me today. Ricky, how are you?
I'm doing great. Felt good to finally see that Blue Jay offense wake up this past series or past game. It was one game. I'm not going to get my hopes up because they got another tough pitcher tonight. So that should be fun. I know how much you like Ohtani. So I'm looking forward to digging into this series and Cincinnati series, the St. Louis series. Blue Jays hopefully hit their stride.
Caitlin and I talked about this a little bit on the weekend, and it's one of those things where they took two or three from St. Louis, sorry, four from Cincinnati, felt like a little bit of a letdown somehow, even though they took two of three. Everyone was looking for the sweep. They come out, they can't win on the Sunday. So we'll talk about the Danny Jansen game, as producer Cam has noted it in the notes. We'll talk about this upcoming series with the Angels, as well as just sort of kind of taking a look around the American League pitching with landscape. Kevin Gausman making his claim for the best pitcher in the American League. Shohei Ohtani going against the Blue Jays. Maybe he has a claim for the best pitcher in the American League. And let's not forget about Alek Manoah. But let's start by talking with the offense busting out a little bit, busting out just as they needed to do against the Cardinals in St. Louis with Jordan Hicks, who throws very, very hard, which I think was maybe a bit of a concern for the Blue Jays offense, looking a little bit exposed against velocity this year. Some of the Blue Jays batters have faced more velocity in terms of just sheer miles per hour than just about any other team in baseball. But Danny Jansen, you and I, when we last spoke, I said Matt Chapman's the guy. When Matt Chapman breaks out, that's when the Blue Jays offense will, the floodgates will open. But maybe it's Danny Jansen. I mean, not only this year, obviously this year with through injuries, he's been unbelievable. But if you go back to May 1st of last year, Danny Jansen is the best hitting catcher in baseball. Did anyone think that this he could be this guy? I mean, I don't know that he's going to be, as hitting like Johnny Bench, but like he's turned himself and has shown himself to be a very, very, very valuable offensive player for the Blue Jays from behind the plate.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, him coming in, was always his catching ability. He can catch, mm-hmm. He can play defense, and he's somebody that's not known for his bat. But when you watch him do what he did on Tuesday, and it was two different pitches, a hanging breaking ball and a fastball in, and you can just tell he got those hands working, got that head out and hit those two home runs. And you know what? Honestly, before he got hurt too, I know it was a small little sample, but we saw it early in the season how he just looked different at the plate, taking better at bats, getting pitches he wanted to hit, and almost when he went down, you're like, oh man, they're actually gonna miss him because he's a guy that looks like he was in for a breakout year, and obviously that set him back a little bit, and then he comes back and he's right where he left off after before he got injured, and the biggest thing. I love the no batting glove look too, man. Like he goes out there and he just grabs that bat and hey, let's go. And I had a chance to have him on my other podcast and just speaking to him and the work that he was putting in. And you can just tell. I mean, he's a hardworking, dedicated guy, a guy that worries more about his pitching staff. I feel like that you're just like, all right, just go out there and handle the staff. Whatever we get out of you offensively, good or bad, we'll take it because you can play the shit out of defense. But hey, man, if you're getting a good stick too and a threat in that lineup, again, it makes this lineup that much better. And like you mentioned, we've been waiting for Matt Chapman to break out. And man, does that guy, like, does he have a little dark cloud over him right now or something? Because it just seems like you mentioned, we talked about this last week. He's hitting the ball hard, but it's just, he's not finding the holes that you expect him to hit. But yeah, I mean, when him having that lineup again, if you add Danny Jansen with power, it makes this lineup that much better.
I wonder if there's something to the difference of sort of the approach between Danny Jansen and Matt Chapman right now. I think if you think back to Matt Chapman's home runs in particular, they've come a lot of them to the middle of the park. He's hitting the ball to the big part of the ballpark. And I mean, when he really gets them, then it doesn't matter where he hits them, they're going out. I mean, he's hit a few up into that under that big Budweiser sign in like left center field and had some to dead center field. But those are also, the ones that he's getting pretty good, but they're falling on the, just on the warning track, are still to that big part of the ballpark. Where Danny Jansen, I think, and maybe I'm going crazy here. I think I've seen a few other people note this as well, that he seems like he's just sort of given up the pretense of like, oh, I'm going to use the whole field. And he's just like, you know what? I'm just going to pull the shit out of the baseball. Like, yeah. Whatever, let's go pull crazy. And and I think it's working for him. He's using the opposite field, a lot less than he had. He's definitely, I mean, last year in particular, he went nuts with the pull stuff. But like, why not? Lean in, barrel the baseball and try to yank it down the line.
The way this lineup is set up, Drew, a guy like Danny Jansen is going to see fastballs. So he has to be ready. And if that's his approach to approaching a pitcher and saying, you know what? They're going to come at me with heaters. I'm just going to swing and like you mentioned, pull and get to that heater, because he is going to see those type of pitches. When you're looking at the bottom of the lineup, you're like, okay, I've just pitched around Matt Chapman because I know who Matt Chapman is and what he's capable of. And now I got to face Danny Jansen. Pitchers think like, okay, I can attack this guy with heaters, and he's proving everyone wrong right now. And hopefully he continues to take advantage of the good pitches he's seeing, the hanging breaking balls and all that good stuff. Because again, and I feel like we talk about this every week, that bottom of the lineup has done some damage. And if it continues to do damage, it makes it that much better for the top of the lineup. And I mean, hallelujah. It almost felt like a breath of fresh air having Vladdy hit a home run. And I feel like the whole team, the whole organization finally had a huge exhale after that, and that again, it looked good. This is the offense that we were expecting out of them. Obviously, it's we're not saying they're going to put up 8 runs every single night, but this is the type of offense that we were expecting.
Okay, now I'm going to throw cold water. You've done my job here for me by transitioning us. So while it was obviously so great for Blue Jays fans to see Danny Jansen go off like that, to see Vlad, do what he has not done as much this year, which is like just do damage on mistakes. I was looking at on Baseball Savant. They kind of break it down in terms of your run value in terms of by pitch. The pitches that are in the heart of the plate, pitches that are on the what they call like the shadow, so like 50% strike, 50% ball. And then there's pitches that are thrown like waste pitches and or whatever. Anyway, there's 4 different categories. So what I've seen is that Vlad is not doing as much damage with stuff thrown in the strike zone this year as he has in the past. So it's good to see him be able to capitalize on those mistakes, really to pound a ball, to hit it in the air, which has obviously been a big concern of his this year. And I know Mike Petriello of MLB.com wrote an interesting about the book on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. But my question is a bigger question. And it's something that while we don't want to diminish the 8-run outburst, but I have a bit of a concern that the Blue Jays are too right-handed. That something we've talked about over the last couple of years, that it makes them vulnerable against relief pitchers in particular, because so many teams have, like you look at the Yankees bullpen, just one big ass hard throwing right hander after another. And it makes the Blue Jays, I think their aggression, while is understandable, which is what I'll get to, but I think it makes the Blue Jays a little bit easier to pitch to. And I also think it's going to only compound or can compound their struggles with runners on scoring position because there's not that good left-handed bat in the lineup. No, I want you to tell me if you think I'm crazy. Do you think that maybe they're too right-handed?
No, I really do. I think it's always good to have a mixture of a couple lefties. In this instance, a lefty would definitely help in that lineup. I really do agree with that. And that's why last year when they traded Rowdy Tellez, I was a little bit like, what happened? What happened there? And obviously we're seeing what Rowdy's doing in Milwaukee and he's doing some good things over there. But you're almost like, that's the type of guy. And again, he wasn't getting enough playing time and all that stuff. But yeah, I really do feel, and you have to wonder that if this is a point of emphasis at the trade deadline, if they're really going to look into this and you would hope. I know there's a guy that played there this weekend that you would love to see in a Toronto Blue Jay uniform. So
sure, it'd be interesting. Of course. So here's my reasoning. And I was talking about this or I was actually going back and forth on Reddit of all places about this. Now, the Blue Jays are really an aggressive team. So there's a lot of questioning right now, especially when the offense is kind of sputtering, which is, you know, why are the Blue Jays are getting exposed by these sliders down and away, you know, the kind of the thing that's plagued right-handed hitters for 40 years, right? That's a really difficult pitch. And there's a lot of talk about the Blue Jays' aggression. But my thing is this. You have to be aggressive in 2022 because everyone's stuff is so good and because you get yourself into a two-strike count. It's not that you're going to only see that tough slider. You can see any one of two or three pitches with two strikes from the majority of relievers these days. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about Jordan Romano, right? He's 50-50 in almost any count. He'll throw you that slider whenever he needs to, but he can also then throw 97 past you. Yep. So if I'm a hitter in the big leagues, I can't get to that point. I can't let it get to two strikes because then what's the difference? I'm out essentially there anyway. But having a left-handed bat in the middle of the lineup I think would be invaluable to, again, those situations where the Blue Jays are trying to start a rally.
Yeah.
Where it's like when you're trying to string hits together, but you've got a lot of the very same type of hitters in a row, I think it makes them easier to pitch against. We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You alluded Joey Votto is a name that's always going to be out there. A guy who has full 10-5 rights. So Joey Votto wouldn't come to Toronto unless he wanted to.
Yeah.
And he's owed a lot of money. And whether or not that is like would factor into the equation, whether or not Cincinnati's looking to get out from underneath that money. It at the end of the day, it all comes back to Joey and if he wants to play. And I think that, you know, Caitlin and I talked about it, and you and I talked about it a little bit before we started recording, which is that he is in a lot of ways too perfect for this lineup. He also really seemed to have relished and like leaned into his experience in Toronto, which hasn't always been the case over his career. But he's a great option, probably at the top of the list, just for what he does, his ability to take pitches, his ability to hit for power, more so especially in the last couple of years as he sort of abandoned his idea that he's going to hit 400 or whatever it was. But but there are other guys out there as well. I mean, we saw the Blue Jays last year when they acquired Corey Dickerson. And there was somebody else that they brought in that, you know, did the job okay. I mean, I think really, but I think it's something that they're going to need to address. And I don't think it's news. This isn't like Ross Atkins isn't listening to this being like, holy shit, what? Left-handed? That's a crazy idea. But I think that the outburst the other day was great. And again, when we saw the Blue Jays at the end of the season last year, number one, they didn't need any left-handed. They hit so many home runs and hit for such power. But I think it's, if you want to win the World Series, you're going to have to beat good teams. You're going to have to go through the Yankees bullpen. You're going to have to go through the Rays bullpen. You're going to have to go through, whoever comes out from the West, Houston. You're going to need a different look at the plate, and I think that's it's something that should be the top of the list for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, and we touched on it a little bit last week too. I brought it up saying that a lot of the pitchers do have the same approach against the Toronto Blue Jay hitters, and we're seeing it more and more and more and more. And I got somebody posted something like, how do you let a guy like Hunter Green throw four pitches, when he has a high walk rate? And I'm like, well, are you not watching the damn game? Like, the dude is like pumping fastballs at you. Mm-hmm. You're not going to, like you mentioned, you don't want to sit there and be like, all right, I'm going to wait him out because he walks guys. This ain't mm-hmm. Little League. The pitch count stuff is Little League shit. Like, oh, let's get his pitch count up. Like that just doesn't work in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. if you wait a guy out and next thing you know, you're 0-2 and he's throwing 101 and he's got a 87 mile per hour slider, you're caught in between. So you don't, like you mentioned, you don't want to get to that point. That's why guys are being aggressive early in the count, because the pitchers are that good nowadays and they're coming after you guys. And honestly, we've talked about this a lot. The Blue Jays hitters have a huge, huge target on their back. Everyone knows how hyped up this team was. If I was a starting pitcher and I was facing them, I know how hyped up Vladdy is, Teoscar is, and everyone else, Matt Chapman. So I'm going to bring my A game. I'm not that I don't bring my A game for any other team, but I'm hyped to face that lineup, and I'm going to do everything it takes to go out there and dominate. And I feel like that's what every starting pitcher has in their mind. Like, I'm going to show that the Toronto Blue Jays are not what everyone thinks they are. And you saw it a little bit with Hunter Green. He came right after them and they struggled a bit. You just don't want to get deep in the count.
You've made a great point that I agree with very much, which is, he is going to walk people, Hunter mm-hmm. Green, but you don't know that he's going to walk you when you're down 0-2.
Yeah.
If you're like, okay, well, that's not my pitch. Okay. So he threw me a fastball and he located it well. It's, on the corner. So maybe I don't want to swing at that one. And the next one comes and it's like, if it's a 50-50 pitch, well, I'll wait because I'll get one better. It's like, now you're 0-2 and he's got this hammer in his back pocket and he's got 102. And, yeah. And as we're recording this here on Thursday, so by the time folks will hear this, the game might be over. But like, against a guy like Shohei Ohtani, who is pitching as well as he ever has, you can't wait. He's got too many pitches to get you out with. Mm-hmm. If you are, the Jays don't have any lefties, so we might not see as many splitters today. But like, that slider he's got working so well this year, and again, he'll throw you those pitches in any count, and he throws 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Speaking of 100 miles an hour, I am so excited to welcome in not quite a surprise, but a surprise in that we've never all been on the same show together. She covers the Blue Jays for the Athletic. Her name is Caitlin McGrath. Caitlin, welcome.
Hello. Two times in 1 week.
Whoa. Two times in 1 week, but this time we've got you, we've got me, we've got Ricky. We're talking about the Blue Jays offense, and the question I asked to Ricky Romero, and he answered in the affirmative, and I'm going to ask you, which is what we're getting at, the Blue Jays approach and how aggressive they are, and mm-hmm. sometimes it can work against them. And one way I think it works against them is, number one, against relievers, and the reason I think it works against them is because I think, and I don't know what you think, are they too right-handed, their batting order?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I think it's something that has been asked about the team for a long time. And thing is, like, on the one hand, you go back to, well, they were pretty right-handed last year mm-hmm. and it worked for them. You look at other lineups around the league. I mean, like, the Yankees are pretty right-handed too. I know they have like some big hitting left-handers in their lineup, Gallo and Anthony Rizzo, which the Blue Jays don't have. And I think that's really what they lack. I mean, it's the left-handers that they do have in the lineup, which is not very many, Tapia, Zimmer, like they don't add much pop to the lineup. And I think that's an issue. And it's not much of a threat. And even if you throw in Kevin Biggio at some point, whether he's going to come back soon or I would expect soon-ish, he's been playing quite a bit with Buffalo. And he's doing the things that he typically does well. But even if you insert him back in the lineup, again, like the threat is not so much power with him. It's like, yeah, he can put up a good at bat. He usually sees a lot of pitches, and that's a good thing. And it's a different look for pitchers with him in there. But again, it's not that threat that, say, the Yankees have when they have Anthony Rizzo or they have Joey Gallo. And so is the left-handed bat something on the one hand, it's somewhat of a simplification. I don't think one left-handed bat would suddenly solve all the Blue Jays' offensive troubles, right? Like it's goes deeper than that right now. And if the whole lineup isn't hitting, if one left-hander in there's you insert it, it's not going to change the whole picture. You need to get Vlad going. You need to get Teoscar going. Mm-hmm. Those things have to happen too. But obviously, like how it's unfolded the first 6 weeks of the year, I think if you had to circle what are some big needs at the trade deadline, I would put a big left-handed bat, maybe 1A, and a swing and miss reliever 1B.
I think, number one, the point about the Yankees is a great one, because when I was looking at this stuff yesterday, because I was comparing the Blue Jays and the White Sox. The White Sox are very much like the Blue Jays. They're kind of treading water. They have a ton of really good right-handed batters, but they're the only team that is worse than the Blue Jays with left-handed batters against right-handed pitchers, which is to your point, which is that like the White Sox, the Blue Jays have got nothing from their lefties. You know, Zach Collins had a good week and it was like, it felt like a godsend. It was like, this is exactly what they need. And I think that's the issue, is that Kevin Biggio is left-handed and Kevin Biggio does do things well, but you cannot hit him in the middle of the lineup. You can't. He's ill-suited for that role. He's good as a number eight or number nine, right? To kind of turn the lineup over.
Yeah.
And get guys going at the top. And again, as I've said 100 times, he's a really good base runner too. So having him in that spot is really beneficial. But the Blue Jays need someone to hit in the middle of their order that's left-handed. And Anthony Rizzo does that job beautifully for the cursed Yankees. He takes advantage of the ballpark, but he's Anthony Rizzo. He sees a tons of pitches. He has good at bats. He's not afraid to punch the ball to left field when he needs to. Joey Gallo is a very different kind of guy, but obviously Joey Gallo is a threat at any time and in any count to hit the ball to the fucking moon. And the Blue Jays don't have that. They don't have that, and they really need it. And again, I think it makes them vulnerable against good teams. And, you know, the Blue Jays offense is so stacked that when everybody's going great, you take your chances. You know what? I don't care. I'll take my chances against any, you know, relief corps in the league. But when it's not that, you've put a lot of pressure on guys who are free swinging, guys who are then getting overmatched or in tough against tough batters, and it doesn't always work. And you know, if we think back to what happened in September, if we're all being honest, we're all friends here. The Blue Jays beat the living snot out of the Orioles and maybe kind of helped to push some of those numbers up a little bit. Again, as we've said, I don't take anything away from any of the guys on the team, and they can all hit, right? They're all great hitters. The Gurriel, Hernandez, you know, Vlad Guerrero, Bo Bichette, George Springer, like, you know, that's five very, very good right-handed hitters. A left-handed guy would be nice. Maybe remember when we stuck with Jose Ramirez? That would have been nice. But I don't know, Ricky. I saw you kind of nodding along. Like, you know, Kevin Biggio does things that are valuable, but again, I just don't think that he's the guy that's going to help to unlock this offense.
No, and to Caitlin's point, it's true. This lineup is going to be ran by a Vladdy Guerrero and a Teoscar Hernandez. They need to get going. And the problem really hasn't been, yes, they've struggled to hit. But the biggest problem has been runners in scoring position, because they're getting the runners there. They're just not bringing them in. And when you do that and you continue to struggle at there, it just puts more pressure on a starting pitcher to go out there and put up zeros. And that's not sustainable over 162 games. There's going to be a point where the pitching staff hits a little bit of a bump and the offense is going to be there picking them up. But right now, the issue hasn't really been, would a left-handed bat look great? Absolutely, but it's producing with runners in scoring position right now where they're hurting, and it all falls because the bottom of the lineup. We've seen Espinal and the great job he's done at the bottom of the lineup. It's the middle top middle part of the lineup that has struggled with runners in scoring position.
Sandy Gressmel, he is the top of the order now.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
They moved him up, which, again, shout out to him and you know, Charlie Montoyo for all of the criticism and questions that have come his way. I'm not afraid to change things up. I'm not afraid to reward a guy who's had a great season and is a tough at bat, and a guy who uses the whole field, not exactly gonna knock the cover off the ball or hit the ball to the moon, as I suggested that Joey Gallo, who the Blue Jays obviously should have traded for last year when Caitlin, it wasn't even me, it was Caitlin who was really saying
it's all me.
It was Caitlin's point. It was all you. But you know, Ricky, let's move on. And you made a good point, which is that the pitching is going to hit a bit of a speed bump, but maybe what if I presuppose that it isn't, because the Blue Jays starting rotation is ridiculous. And the question now I will ask is perhaps Kevin Gausman the best starting pitcher in the American League?
Well, there's a big fella in that rotation that goes by the name of Alek Manoah that's definitely giving him a run for his money. Is he one of the top pitchers in the American League? Absolutely. Is he the best? I don't know yet, but obviously he's gone out there and he's been as good as advertised. Again, a guy who was let go by the Baltimore Orioles, bounced around a little bit through Atlanta, and then went to San Francisco, found himself, and then parlayed that into a huge contract with Toronto Blue Jays, and we're seeing it. I mean, he's fun to watch when you go out there, and the way he's attacking hitters, and even his last start, he walked a few guys, and I felt like the commentators were like, "Whoa, this is the first time he's walked back to back guys, and I don't know how long." And I'm like, "Jesus, if that's a bad start for him, can you imagine how good he's really been?" And he has been really, really good, but It's a big luxury when you're able to say you have Kevin Gausman, Alek Manoah in the same rotation. And don't forget about the rest of the other guys. But those two top guys have definitely led this rotation really, really well.
Well, then
the one thing I'll say before I go over to you, Caitlin, is you talk about I talk about that 50-50 where if you get to two strikes with Kevin Gausman, you don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
He's another guy you have to be aggressive against because he has that splitter is always there, but it's also, so is 97, right? So you can't sit on one. So if you can't be aggressive, you as a hitter want to be aggressive early in the count. So he knows that. So he's going to be able to get ahead and then you're doomed. But I don't know, Caitlin, what do you think? Is the battle for the best pitcher in the American League within the Blue Jays rotation itself?
Maybe. Obviously, it's early. Like the numbers really like Kevin Gausman right now, or specifically the Fangraphs numbers and like the way they determine their war. Like he is one win ahead of even the next best starting pitcher right now. Like he's at 2.7 war and the next best is at like 1.7. So that just shows you that some numbers really like Kevin Gausman. I think it's FIP that likes him, right? He's got a really, really low FIP.
I'll for the benefit of the folks who may not know, so Fangraphs wins above replacement is derived from FIP, from fielding independent pitching, which is only factors in the things that in the mind of this model that was created about 15 years ago or so, which was, you know, walks versus strikeouts and then home runs allowed. So if you do what Kevin Gausman has done, which is you don't walk anybody and you don't give up any home runs, your FIP is going to be really, really good. Kevin Gausman doesn't strike out at nearly as many people and he walks more people, but where Kevin Gausman gets his, you know, edge is that he allows really, really soft contact. So that's not captured in FIP, but it is captured in the runs allowed. And when we watch the game, that's more of what we see. So sorry, Caitlin, I interjected there for a brief explanation. So that's why Fangraphs likes him. Not that the Baseball Reference, which is built off of runs allowed per nine innings, doesn't like Kevin Gausman as much, but the way that he started this season has given him this huge, huge advantage on the Fangraphs tabulation.
Yeah. It's funny because I remember last year, like covering Robbie Ray, Fangraphs WAR didn't like him as much because he gave up the home runs and but obviously he won the Cy Young, so it's fine. But like Kevin Gausman's, he's just really like, he's such a cool guy. You know, like he has such a kind of like easygoing nature. And I think even the broadcast was talking about that the other day, which is funny because I never usually get to watch the broadcast that often because obviously I'm there. And so it's fun for me sometimes to listen to like how the broadcast is talking about these guys. And like, I think Arash had talked to Kevin and how maybe Kevin earlier in his career would get, could sort of really spiral, I think, with one bad inning or like, you know, get really messed up if things weren't going his way. And he's really kind of evolved, I think, as a pitcher. And he's just very cool and laid back. And you can see that on the mound. Like, he doesn't usually look like he's like frazzled at all, and like there's not been many times this year where he could get frazzled because he's just been in such command. But you look at like the way that he's just sort of found his way in the Blue Jays rotation. He's so easily sort of transitioned into somewhat of a leader, but he's not, it doesn't strike me as like a guy that's like tells people things. He sort of just like lets his play do the talking, and you know, if guys want to ask him questions, he's totally open to answering questions and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, he's been cool to just cover and see how he works. And he's just kind of a real laid back dude. And it's kind of interesting to hear him talk after games because he's very cerebral. He's really talkative and stuff. But I've sort of enjoyed getting to cover him over these first 6 weeks and kind of learned a lot from him already.
I remember when he first signed with the Toronto Blue Jays and him coming from San Francisco, I got a chance to be part of that organization for a couple years. And I had a friend text me right away and they're like, dude, you're going to love Kevin Gausman. You're just going to love him. That's all he said. He's like, you're going to love him. And I was like, wow, that's cool. He's like, if you ever see him, please say what's up. First class all the way. And as Caitlin alluded to, it just seems like he's that type of guy. And you're right. I kind of like watch. I really like enjoy watching his demeanor on the mound. There's not a worry in the world when he's out there. It just seems like he knows what he wants to do. And the biggest thing that I've enjoyed from him and Manoah is how deep in the game they've been able to get. That's something you really don't see nowadays with starting pitchers because there's so many mixed matching and stuff like that and managers trying to play ahead and who's going to be the reliever that comes out. But with those two guys, it just seems like when you look up, they're in the sixth inning at like 65 pitches, 70 pitches. And me being... I always like to say this, coming from Roy Halladay University, you love to see stuff like that. You love to see guys get deep into games because as a starter, for me, I always took it personal. Like, I got to get into the seventh, eighth inning to give my bullpen a rest, to get to my closer and minimize the usage of guys in the bullpen.
One thing I want to say before we move on is that Caitlin mentioned, you know, Kevin Gossman's really good about letting his play do the talking and leadership. Sometimes they'll show a shot in the dugout, and obviously a very key tenet of Kevin Gossman's leadership is to let Alek Manoah do the talking, where it looks like he looks like a guy who's definitely like bemused by Manoah, who comes over with all of his like golden retriever energy and is like, yo. And then Kevin Gossman's like, like not dismissive, like obviously listening and engaged, but also like let Alek say his piece. But the thing that Ricky, you mentioned that I really want to key on, which is the ability to go into deep in the game. So we could get into the why didn't they let Manoah finish his game. But the thing that makes Alek Manoah so great and the thing that set him up to get so deep into the games is that soft contact. He doesn't strike out nearly as many guys as Kevin Gausman, and he obviously walks more than Gausman because everybody does.
And but, hits. He's not scared to hit somebody either.
No, he's not afraid to hit somebody as well. But he, if you look at on StatCast, they have expected weighted on base average. So again, like an expected stat that includes everything: strikeouts, walks, home runs, the regularity of hard contact. And Gausman and Manoah are exactly equal in the 86th percentile. So like really, really, really good at suppressing runs. And so much of that comes from Manoah, who doesn't allow hard hit balls. He doesn't allow you to barrel the ball up, and he doesn't walk anybody. Again, he's still so elite in that regard. He only pales in comparison to Gausman, who's the best that there is, basically. But it's just a bit of a different approach. And we've talked about it a bunch. Manoah is a real battler, and he's a real, like, he just, you know, what's working today. And he gets in there. And again, we talk about him as if he's kind of just scraping by in his guile, but he's a guy that can throw 95, 96, 97, like when he needs to, right? He doesn't always have to dial it up, but just a little bit of a different approach. But again, an unbelievably good start to the season. And a guy that, you know, if you're watching Alek Manoah being like, I wonder if this is going to, when's this going to turn? When's this going to turn into a pumpkin? I can't see it. Like the stuff that he's got, the command, the ability to keep the ball off the barrel and then miss it when he needs to. That's a really, really, really good pitcher for a long time.
The confidence that he shows too, the poise that he shows when he's in trouble. I mean, we watched that, what was it, bases loaded jam that he got in, and it's like, it was like nothing. He jammed Tommy Pham and an absolute saw job, and he did what he had to do. And just he goes out there again, he goes out there every fifth day, and you're just like, okay, is this the day that he's gonna give up, you know, a few runs here and there? And but no, he's just going out there and he's so confident in himself, and that's probably 90% of pitching. When you're that confident and you know you're the man and you know you gotta go out there and do what you gotta do. It's amazing. Him and Gausman, the way that they miss barrels when they're ahead in the count, when they're in trouble, how they're able to bear down in those situations when there's runners in scoring position. All that stuff, I love watching that they actually get down to pitching. I know we get a lot into velocity nowadays and, oh, who throws harder, who throws this, who's got the nasty stuff. But when push comes to shove and these guys are in those situations and you watch them actually work their magic and their art, it's awesome to see that.
Yeah, and I think another thing with Alec that gives you confidence is like, some of the teams that he's most dominant against are the AL East, and they're the teams that have seen him the most. Like, you know, there's been opportunity for other teams to get a book on him, and consistently he pitches well against the Yankees. He pitches well against the Rays. Like, he pitches well against Boston. Like, they haven't played Baltimore yet, but like, I assume he'll pitch well against them too.
Spoiler alert, he's going to be fine.
Well, isn't that the one team he got hit around pretty bad last year? I mean, that's the one team, I think.
Well, Robbie Ray got hit by the Baltimore Orioles. Quite a bit. I can't remember Alec exactly what his starts were like, but Baltimore actually hit the Blue Jays pretty well, honestly, last year. Like they're not a bad offensive team. It's been the pitching that's been the issue for them.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the thing with Alec has always been like he's well aware that guys are going to start to get to know him better, and that's the thing with him is he works really hard. Like he's confident and he's sure in himself, but he also puts in a lot of work to get better and to make sure that he's not predictable out there, or that he's one step ahead of the hitters too. So that's also a lot of work goes into who he's been and where he's still going in his career.
Yeah, we were messaging not long ago, and that, like Caitlin mentioned, one of the things he said, he's like, it's been a super fun processing and growing and learning in this game. And that just shows you who he is. He's not a guy that's going to be complacent in where he is now. He just wants to continue to learn. And I said, that's the key, man. You continue to do that, you're off to great things in this game. And the moment you stop learning in this game, this game will bite you in the ass.
I don't know if you knew this about him. He's very big. when they showed him when he came out of that start, it looked like he was pleading his case with Pete Walker and Charlie Montoya. Pete Walker is a big dude, and he is like absolutely towering over him, meanwhile making Charlie Montoya look like he's like leading his elderly grandfather around somewhere. Like
he was gonna pick up Charlie and just like put him aside and be like, Charlie, let me just handle this. I got it. I got the ninth.
More spin rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
One last thing that we could talk about, again, before we take a quick look ahead to the Angels. Caitlin, you mentioned it in your own personal shopping list that you're going to do on behalf of Ross Atkins, which was a swing and miss reliever. So we're talking about taking some of the pressure off the bullpen with these deep and excellent starts that are coming from Alek Manoah and Kevin Gausman. But at the same time, there is a definite need for somebody in the bullpen. I think we saw that in the first game against St. Louis when the three-run batter kind of came up and caught the Blue Jays a little bit. Maybe Charlie Montoyo getting a little bit cute with going for the platoon advantage that put them in an unfortunate situation. But when you talk about – so what is it about swing and miss, Caitlin, that you think the Blue Jays need in the bullpen?
Well, it's funny because the Blue Jays, I think we know, have faced a lot of top velocity this year, like the way their schedule has been. And it's kind of funny that like consistently the Blue Jays hitters are out there facing like just guy after guy after guy that is throwing 100. And then of course, like they call their bullpen and it's like, you know, it was Adam Simber throwing like a frisbee up there. And it's like, when are the Blue Jays going to face some guys like in their bullpen? But anyway, the swing and miss is something that was actually talked about like not so long ago with Ross Atkins. Like someone asked him about it. And it's interesting. I think they're kind of aware that they're not getting the swing and miss that they did even last year. And like it's mostly the same guys. Like they, if anything, they added a guy they thought would get more in swing and miss from, and they're not getting that from Jimmy Garcia. But the thing is, part of the answer to the question that Ross was asked was he was saying they hope they can get more swing and miss out of who they already have, whether that's, again, like trying to get more from Garcia, whether it's, I mean, maybe not that Tim Mesa is specifically a swing and miss guy. He does work a lot with contact, but he can strike guys out, obviously, too. Maybe it's like a Trevor Richards trying to get more swing and miss from him. He's a guy that can get a lot of strikeouts. I don't think he's quite at the level that he was last year. So if it's just working with some of their individual pitchers who probably have a few more percentage in them to get a few more strikeouts. And then it's also probably something that they can add maybe internally. I know last year time when we talked about the elusive Nate Pearson. There's also, you know, Julian Merriweather, who we saw, who's a guy, I know you're big on Drew, and there's a lot of hope with him. And obviously you saw him get out of it the other day against St. Louis just by a foot, I think, or something. He's very lucky that was an Arenado, was a double as opposed to a home run. So you kind of hope that with Julian Merriweather's stuff, he could get more swing and miss. But again, like that is, you're trying to hope on something that really hasn't shown up much beyond that like first week, that magical first week of Julian Merriweather.
I'll never forget
last season.
I'll never forget as long as I live.
So yeah,
sorry, I hate to interrupt you, but like that week against the Yankees, Julian Merriweather pitched as well as anybody could. Like he struck out Aaron Hicks in a way that was like Hicks shouldn't even have brought the bat to the plate. Like he had no hope. He had no hope. He was dotting like 99 and then throwing that insane changeup. Sorry, I can't get over it. Like it's like I am Julian pilled. That's all I can think about is how good Julian Merriweather can be.
Yeah. So if you get some of that, that's great. But and it's interesting. Like the other thing is that in the organization, I think they're sort of developing guys to have more swing and miss. So I think it's coming. There was also obviously that start in Dunedin a couple weeks ago where they struck out 24 of 27 against the Yankees, like three pitchers combined for 24 strikeouts. And so I think there's something there with what the Blue Jays are trying to do and what they're recognizing they sort of need in the organization. I think the pitching lab that they've built in Dunedin at their player complex is showing some returns in that regard. And Ross basically basically said that they are just kind of taking more risks. I think they're going for more velocity, even if it's at some expense of command. And that's just what they're doing at the development level. So I think the Blue Jays are aware of that as something that the organization needs, but that's not going to help them in the immediate. I think, like I said, there's some options there. If Nate Pearson suddenly comes along and he can throw swing and miss, like that's what you're going to take that for your bullpen. But I think ultimately they probably have to go out and get somebody. And the good thing is that getting relief pitching at the deadline is, I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's readily available for the most part. And we've seen the Blue Jays go out and do a good job addressing their bullpen over the years, especially last year. So it's something they can do. And I think it's something they're aware of. And I would expect that they're going to prioritize getting another reliever, because I think that's that would just bring their bullpen up to the next level.
Let me ask you guys a question. And I'm just curious, because we talked about Joey Votto looking good in a Toronto Blue Jay being left-handed, a Toronto Blue Jay uniform, him being left-handed. If there was one reliever that you could go out and get right now, who would you go out and get?
That's a great question. This is one of those things where like the list changes all the time. And, you know, you and I were joking about that, about like, oh, the Cubs have this guy in the sixth inning and he throws 103 miles an hour. But like, there's so many guys like that now. So I don't know. I mean, what I was going to ask you is, are you coming across a little bit like a little bit of the old school guy? You know, you're like, you know, maybe it's, you know, are we putting too much emphasis on swing and miss? Do you think it's just more about guys who can get outs?
Well, yeah, it is about, I played with the closer who didn't have crazy hard stuff in Casey Jansen. And I saw the way he did his job and how well he did it as a closer. But yeah, I still feel like there should be some swing and misses at the in the middle part of that bullpen. I've always said that, and I agree with you guys. I really do. I think there should be somebody that comes in and you're like, okay, this guy can come in and just blow the doors off three straight hitters, and you have no worries, because it always feels good when you have that type of guy. But you know, and nothing against Simber and Richards, but they're guys who don't strike guys out a lot, and they pitch more to contact, and you know, and do the little things so well. But yeah, that's what I was wondering. I was like, who's a reliever that would look good in a Blue Jay uniform? And I'm kind of going through the closers that other teams have right now that are in last place. And I'm like, would a Daniel Bard look good in a Blue Jay uniform? I mean, he's a guy that throws 98, 99, 100. He's a veteran guy, knows the ALEs, and his story is pretty damn incredible too. Mm-hmm. But so yeah, I was just, that's what I was wondering. I was like, you guys know the players more, so I was looking for your opinion.
I'm sure Caitlin's got a list that she's formulating as we get closer to.
No, I haven't started my list yet. I will. That's probably on my to-do list.
It's hard because the Blue Jays, to their eternal credit, are good at finding guys that we're not gonna like, that I'm not necessarily gonna be looking for. Yeah. Right off the top, you know, when I for example, I was looking for who are left-handed batters that the Blue Jays could pursue as rentals at the deadline. So I'm like Andrew Benintendi, you know, Cole Calhoun, you know, Michael Conforto, who's not going to come, you know, guys like that. But the Blue Jays, like when we were sitting here last year, Caitlin, we weren't saying like, I think the Blue Jays should go and acquire Trevor Richards. But they did, and it worked out really well. We weren't saying the Blue Jays need to go get Adam Simber today and to solidify the bullpen. That guy throws 80 miles an hour. But, you know, it's crazy that we're here. And again, I kind of went off a little bit on it last weekend. But, like, the idea of Nate Pearson, I just want the reality of Nate Pearson to line up with the idea of Absolutely. Nate Pearson even just a little bit, because it's everything that Blue Jays could hope for. And Julian Merriweather as well. I think Julian Merriweather and Ryan Borocki are kind of like mirror images of each other. Like, you know, as we saw on Monday night, Ryan Borocki really struggles against right-handed batters, and Merriweather this year in particular has really struggled against lefties. So you got to be careful about when you deploy those guys, which is defeats the purpose of these like big velocity, you know, big dick donkeys coming in to get big outs, right? Like, you need to just be like, I'm going to put you out there against whoever and you're going to blow them away. And Nate Pearson could be that guy. He really can. And I need to see it before I can believe it, unfortunately, at this point. And it is a sexy acquisition. If Nate Pearson wanders in and is able to throw, kind of do what Aaron Sanchez did in like 2015, yeah, right? Just, That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy that can honestly come in and, and be a huge asset out of the bullpen. And he's got great stuff. We've seen it. We've seen his good stuff. And you hope that he comes back and is able to help, you know, whether it's a starter or as a reliever. But right now it looks like he'd be a reliever with the staff they got going.
So, Caitlin, you got anything else to add? Or do you want to, well, I was going to move on to the Angels coming up this week.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple, speaking of bullpens, not necessarily big swing and, you know, big swing and miss guys, but familiar faces in the blue, in the Angels bullpen, Aaron Loop.
Oh,
having
yeah.
another great year.
Good year.
Hey, he's like sneaky, man. Aaron Loop is sneaky. He's just like, just continues to go out there and just put up good numbers every single year.
Mm-hmm. He's at that point now where it's like, he's 34, but like he has put together a very, he'll pitch his 500th big league game later this year. Like that's really something. And you know, in some ways, maybe he reminds me of kind of like Jason Fraser. Jason Fraser was, I mean, he doesn't quite throw as hard. Jason Fraser was, I remember somebody talking about calling him the tuning fork, that it was like, you check the gun against Jason Fraser. You don't check the Jason Fraser against the gun. It's like, okay, 94, then the gun is right. But like, he did that forever. But yeah, Aaron Loop, Ryan Tepera, who bounced back, had a great year with Chicago, got an accidental MVP vote. And then Aaron Loop, guys you will see coming out of that Angels bullpen, as well as Raisel Iglesias, who's not having as great a season, has had a little bit of bad luck, I think, and given up with just a few ill-timed home runs. So some of his numbers look worse than others. But
that was always his thing, though, didn't he? He always had some trouble with the home runs, I think. Wasn't that always his thing?
I mean, I feel like a guy with his style is always going to be kind of prone to that. But he's really good, and the Angels threw a whole truck full of money at him. And obviously the Angels can score, and the Angels have got a great offense. And then they have somebody who's as good as it gets going against them tonight. I don't know. I'm always excited to watch Shohei Ohtani. I'm excited to watch the Blue Jays try to figure him out as well.
Are you going to be able to stay up?
I think so. I need to get a coffee. I was out playing baseball. I didn't get home till like midnight last night. So I'm like, okay, good. I'll be good for Shohei Ohtani.
The thing that's good about this series is it's kind of a little bit of a best on best, in the sense that the Blue Jays rotation has been, by some standards, by some metrics, the best in the American League. And then you have the Angels offense that has been one of the best as well. And so it's always kind of interesting when you contrast those two things. You have a really, really good pitching staff, although the Angels will miss Gausman, I guess. But going against a really good offense. And, you know, the Blue Jays then are coming off what was a good offensive performance, obviously, the last time, but they have to kind of keep it going. And you always hear that momentum is really big in baseball. And it's funny because the Blue Jays played so many games in a row where you're like, they need an off day, and they didn't get one at the time. And then now they like kind of got it going a little bit, and they have this off day in California. So, I mean, that's nice. I'm sure they're all glad to have that off day in California. But then you kind of wonder, like, would it be better if they just kept playing, if their offense keeps going? But I don't know how much truth there is to that, or that's just like a talking point we always turn to as the media, and we're like, oh, well, you know, if they didn't hit, it's because of that off day. But I'm excited for this series. I'm not super excited to having to stay up till 9:30 for it to start.
But, hey, I'm feeling good. Yeah. 6:30, 7 o'clock, my kids are in bed. I'm looking forward to sitting back, kicking my feet up, and watching till 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
This was like your ideal day off, right? This is like day off in your backyard. That would have been a lot of fun, I'm sure. We talked about the Angels. We didn't talk about this guy who plays for them in the outfield. I think his name is Mike Trout. he may or may not be the greatest player to ever lace them up, who is having another absolute monster of a season. He has hit the Jays pretty good in his career because they are a baseball team, and that's just sort of what he does. So always fun to watch the Jays against the best, as Caitlin said, and the Angels are playing really well. Finally, after like 10 years, they're playing well, and they've got, you know, just the human highlight reel himself on the mound. So I know I'm going to enjoy it. I hope you too enjoy it. Caitlin, I hope you are able. And you got to get up early to watch tennis. This is a tough week for you.
I know. Well, I haven't really been getting, it's on in the background, you can see. I haven't really been getting up early. I tend to like take it easy for the first week of a major because it's like the early rounds, and I'll be alerted if there's an upset and I need to like, you know, get up for it or something. But I tend to save myself for the second week of a major, because that's when all that's when it really starts to matter. And
Caitlin, you should have been out here in Southern California.
Playing tennis all year round. Living the life.
Yeah, I'm not a very good tennis player, actually. I'm actually not good at all. I just like to watch.
I'm not a good, very good baseball player. And yet here we are. Yeah. All right, that does it for this episode of Spin Right. Thank you, Caitlin, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
The full gang here. Caitlin, thank you for joining us. Ricky, thank you, as always, for taking the time out of your morning to join us. You get to go out and like have a whole day. We'll be back next week talking more about your Toronto Blue Jays on Spin Right.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.